What is God's purpose for marriage? How should we respond when traditional marriage is openly mocked as irrelevant? The Issues, Etc. Book of the Month for March is titled Your Marriage by God's Design. It's written by Issues, Etc. regular guests Scott and Julie Stiegemeier. You can find out more about Your Marriage by God's Design at issuesetc.org, or you can call Concordia Publishing House 1-800-325-3040. Your Marriage by God's Design, the Issues, Etc. Book of the Month. I think it's safe to say that this has a lot of people spooked. When it comes to our kids and their education, parents are rightfully very protective of their kids, not only because they want to make sure the kids are getting a good education, but they want to make sure the kids aren't getting a bad education. And one of the things that's come in for a lot of criticism lately is an education initiative, very, very common in the United States, and that's why it's called Common Core, that seeks to have standards, national standards, not so much, well, accepted, but maybe some people might say imposed from the top. Joining us to talk about this educational initiative called Common Core, Dr. Christian Kopf. He's Associate Director of the Honors Program at the University of Colorado Boulder, and he'll be one of the speakers at the Consortium for Classical and Lutheran Education Conference, July the 15th through the 17th in St. Louis. Dr. Kopf, welcome back to Issues, Etc.
It's great to be here, Todd.
What problem in education is Common Core attempting to solve?
The initial impulse for Common Core came from the perception that America's public school system, which had been considered the best in the world, was increasingly not preparing its graduates to participate in the labor force in the modern, contemporary modern world.
And how is it addressing that issue? What is its solution to that problem?
Its basic idea is the presentation of a grade-by-grade outline of what children should know so that when they graduate from high school, they'll be ready for college and careers. And this outline is backed up by a series of tests to give us knowledge as to whether or not they really are meeting the standards of that outline.
How is this different than what is kind of the current practice in education?
The difference is there is a great consensus about what should be done, and in many subjects like math, for example, most people are basically following the same outline. But there are many areas, outlier areas, that includes inner cities, that includes poor areas of the country, in which these outlines are not being met, these standards are not being met, and in which indeed they're even years behind, either in reading or in math, or in both. And this is an attempt to get something so that throughout the country, when this was first introduced in 2010, 45 states signed on. The idea was we would know where people were throughout the country and would be moving toward national standards that would make sure that graduates from high school would be ready across the nation for the modern world.
This really isn't, we can talk about the particulars of this approach, but this attempt to solve this problem, to standardize education nationally, this isn't the first attempt to do that, is it?
No, the dream since the days of John Dewey has been to have a national curriculum, has been to make sure that all Americans, and even when public schooling has been pushed even from the beginning, that there be a large group of citizens, of students, and hopefully everybody, who was ready to work and participate as a citizen, and that includes things like, and also, since it often began religiously, you know, read the Bible and read the Constitution, basically.
So what are the strengths? Let's start with the strengths of Common Core. How would you describe them?
The strength is that some very smart educational reformers, who many of whom are so-called neoconservatives, disgruntled liberals who admit that, you know, we haven't been always doing things the right way, have gotten together on the basis of a lot of research and a lot of testing to come up with standards which, although they're introduced state by state, are meant to give us a national level of graduation with which we can then, you know, prepare kids, then send kids to college and to jobs.
What are the concerns that parents are expressing about Common Core?
parents are unhappy that local control is taken away. They feel that different parts of the country have different needs, different strengths, and different weaknesses, and this national set of standards doesn't confront the reality that a kid in a suburb of New York City, a kid out in the Southwest, and a kid in the slums of Los Angeles have very different needs than from one another. Let's put it that way.
Now, what are your concerns as you look at Common Core? How would you describe them?
Well, my two biggest concerns, one is what I would call sort of the Obamacare concern, which is that we do have a very large country with many different states. It's often brought up that all European countries have this kind of common set of standards. Problem is, European countries, for the most part, are the size of our states. And our country is very, very different, and we do have these different, and what is needed is a response to this difference, even though, of course, we do know we want to have things in common. And trying to introduce this in 45 states, we're finding state after state is now withdrawing, backing off, and defunding it because aspects of it don't respond to their particular needs. Now, I have another objection as a proponent of classical Christian education that we already have in the modern world since the Renaissance and Reformation, the greatest curriculum, the curriculum that created the modern world, the classical curriculum of grammar, logic, and rhetoric and language, of arithmetic, geometry, and then science and music on the other side, and that this system doesn't really encourage or take advantage of that fantastic curriculum, which has educated great people in the West from the time of Erasmus and Luther all the way to practically, you know, World War II.
Would you go so far as to say that Common Core essentially ignores the classical curriculum?
Its problem is it ignores it. There are a number of the standards which you can look at them and say, oh, wow, classical education does that. So, you know, it's not 100%, I'm not presenting a 100% negative view of Common Core, but it basically ignores it, and that silence is deafening for those of us who advocate classical Christian education.
Now, what concerns do teachers have, the people who actually have to implement this in the classroom hours, day after day, what concerns do they have about Common Core?
The teachers have been presenting two objections that I hear. One is that it has been, although from the point of view of the people who are behind it, it's been done state by state. Still, from the point of view of local schools and school districts, they feel it's being imposed in a top-down way. Secondly, there is a lot of testing involved in this in order to show that people are meeting the standards and the outlines, and many teachers feel that they spend too much time testing and too little time teaching.
Is it the I'm working from my distant high school experience, for instance. There was standardized testing, but it was generally toward kind of being able to report numbers for the school or something like that. What is the testing in Common Core like?
Well, every state almost at this stage has some kind of state-level tests that are usually aimed at testing the quality of the school, not so much the individual. These tests are more aimed at seeing whether or not individual students are hitting benchmarks at each grade level, and so that when they get out of 12th grade, they will have then be ready for college and be ready for a job. So this is more individually focused. Most of the state exams have been put in to test whether schools are doing their job.
In your opinion, are the benchmarks that Common Core puts in place for the grade levels, are they too low, too high, maybe missing the mark, entirely missing a subject, something like that?
There have been individual objections to the math and literature side of things, and I respect the math objections, but I don't really teach math and don't have the same feeling. The major problems with the benchmarks as they exist is that there is a one-size-fits-all aspect to it, which is a potential problem. Of course, you know, more than 10% of the kids in America move every single year. So, you know, there are many ways in which common standards would be a great thing. Also, by the time you get to high school, 70% of the reading is nonfiction. And for those of us who are committed to the classical tradition and the great works of Western literature, this seems to us to have stood that on its head. It's all meant to make sure people can read textbooks and read newspapers. Of course you want people doing that, but honestly, it's the great works of literature. By the time they get to high school and then college, they should be reading great literature. And so it seems to a lot of us that this has stood on its head, the right relationship of what education does.
Do you have concerns about high schools that make their major focus college prep?
That's a great question because college prep is important. I'm in favor of private schools that are college prep, you know, on and on. And surely, and as schools, for example, I live in Boulder, Colorado. The high schools here are very focused on that. That's appropriate. But you just have to drive for half an hour, three quarters of an hour to get to the poorer parts of Denver. And those are places where these kids need to make sure they have the fundamental skills. Most of them are not going to go to college. A certain, all too tragically large a number are going to drop out of high school altogether. And there really is a different needs in a place like Boulder, Colorado, full of high-tech companies and the sons and daughters of college professors, and the inner city in Denver, where you have almost exactly the opposite needs. A lot of the kids are English language learners, for goodness sake. So there is a real problem here that the variety of problems in American education is not being met by something that's so determinedly college prep and pre-professional.
What is a better solution? I mean, considering the features of Common Core as it is, what's a better solution?
There, you know, again, this is why I speak of the Obamacare problem. Part of the problem is that there isn't a national better solution. Our states are different. Even within states, people who live in rural areas, people live in suburbs, people live in the inner city, do have a common need to be able to read, write, and do the basic types of math that are essential. But aside from that, they have different needs. And what I like about classical education is that it provides the fundamental vision and also some very good ideas as well, but it allows for the fact that schools are different and they need to respond to their audience, not to create a kind of imaginary national level on a country that, after all, is, you know, a continent wide. It's not Italy. It's not Liechtenstein. It's really, really big and has a lot of different people in it. And so I think we do need a common curricular vision, but the benchmarks at every single stage are not a realistic way to meet the needs of all the kids who are going to school in this country.
Dr. Christian Kopf is our guest. We're talking about the educational initiative called Common Core. I'm Todd Wilkin. This is Issues Etc.
In Higher Things, we believe that if you put good Christ crucified for you Lutheranism into a youth, you'll get a good Christ crucified for you Lutheran youth. Join us this July at the Higher Things Crucified Youth Conferences in Florida, Wisconsin, Utah. Check us out at www.higherthings.org. Higherthings.org. Dare your youth to be Lutherans this summer.
This is Pastor Clint Poppy, Good Shepherd Lutheran Church in Lincoln, Nebraska, a proud supporter of Issues Etc. Each month we host the Nebraska Lutherans for Confessional Study, a serious study of Lutheran theology. We generally meet on the fourth Thursday of each month from 9:30 to 2:30, and both clergy and laity are invited. There is no charge to attend. For more information, please call the church office or visit our website, goodshepherdlincoln.org, and click on the green NLCS tab.
That first presentation will be on how lawyers look at making the case for the reliability of the New Testament.
Craig Parton talking about his presentation at this summer's Issues Etc. Making the Case conference.
The information we have about Jesus, primarily about his life and death and resurrection, primarily comes from the four Gospels, certainly from the rest of the New Testament. But if the record we have of Jesus Christ can't be relied on, we're doomed.
You can meet and hear Craig Parton making the case for the historical Jesus June 13th and 14th at the Issues Etc. Making the Case conference in Collinsville, Illinois. For more information, just look for the Making the Case logo at our homepage, issuesetc.org, or call 618-223-8385, 618-223-8385. The Issues Etc. Making the Case conference, June 13th and 14th in Collinsville, Illinois.
Talk radio for the thinking Christian. You're listening to Issues Etc.
Did you know that you can listen to Issues Etc. 24/7? Check out our website, issuesetc.org, and go to the Listen On Demand page. Listen at the gym, in your kitchen, in your garden, on your iPod, your computer, or in your car. The technology may be new, but the truth never changes. Issues Etc. On Demand audio, available for your convenience at issuesetc.org. 10 hours of new programming each week. issuesetc.org, and click Listen On Demand.
Christ at the Center, The Justification of the Ungodly, A Contemporary View of Faith and Reason, The Holy Spirit in Christ. These are just some of the almost 30 essays included in Propter Christum, Christ at the Center. It's a new book of essays in honor of Issues Etc. regular guest, Pastor Daniel Preuss. Find out more and purchase Propter Christum at shop.logia.org. Propter Christum, Christ at the Center, shop.logia.org.
You know, it's just not true. I mean, knowledge does hurt. You know, if I give Al-Qaeda the plans to make an atomic bomb, that would end up hurting a lot of people.
It kind of reminds me of the old Ptolemaic model with all these epicycles used to explain the positions of the planets. You can make it work, but, you know, is it reality?
And that's the temptation that American cultural Christianity has fallen into, is they try to artificially induce the feeling of the presence of God.
I like to think of the tempter being tempted. He knows the passages. He knows what the death of Jesus means at some level intellectually. But when he gets a chance to kill God, he can't resist.
In about an hour, we're going to play Issues Etc. Soundbite of the Week. Four soundbites we'll play for you. All you got to do is listen. And then give us a call, send us an email, go to our Facebook fan page, and vote for which one you think ought to be Issues Etc. Soundbite of the Week. It's also your opportunity to win the LPR bundle package. And I have Issues T-shirt and Issues Etc. travel mug, pen, bumper sticker, mouse pad, and notepad that goes to the listener with the best vote when we play Issues Etc. Soundbite of the Week in about an hour. In the meantime, we're talking about the educational initiative called Common Core. Dr. Christian Kopf is our guest. Dr. Kopf, you spoke earlier about classical education creating Western civilization. It gets me wondering, what kind of civilization would you see Common Core creating?
It's a dewy-eyed vision in which there is participation, but no common good, in which it, which is secular, and which ignores or excludes religion, which concentrates upon reading newspapers and magazines and textbooks, and leaves out not only great works of literature, but the Bible.
You say Deweyite vision. Take us just a little bit, for those of us unfamiliar with the individual you're talking about there, except for the decimal system, I believe. Tell us a little bit about this and his, well, I think you'd probably say negative impact on education.
Yes, and it could also be Manila Bay if we really wanted to get into the Spanish-American War. Yeah, for the founding of our country from the very beginning, from the time when people came over in the 17th century, had an educational system that was classical, which separated things into the arts of language and the arts of mathematics, and gave people those fundamentals from which they could either go on to a job or they could go on to college and then use them on that level. With the 20th century came the idea that that was old-fashioned. We needed a world in which STEM subjects, in which science was more important, in which citizenship was not the goal of seeking the common good, but of standing up for your side, and you had to know how to do that. It was pragmatic. It's practical. They don't even want kids to learn cursive. They don't want them to learn dead languages like Latin and Greek. They want to make sure that every subject really is equally good in training somebody's mind, and in which also the teachers no longer had to know these things either. And so we see grammar become irrelevant. We see logic turn into critical thinking, which is related but not the same. We see that everything should be practical and aimed really totally at a career focus. I really find a career-focused education more problematic than a college prep education because there's more. It's important to be able to get a job, but there's more to life to getting a job. And furthermore, a lot of the jobs that are out there right now are going to go away, and there'll be new jobs. And if you're educated and can think and express yourself, you can prepare yourself for these new jobs. And if you're not, you're stuck.
So what you're saying there is that the classical model prepared a man for the rest of life, whatever life may hold for him, whereas a career-oriented education narrows the prospect.
It narrows the prospect to what we have right now. Ironically, it's more conservative. The classical education is traditionalist, but that tradition allows you to open you up not only for the wonders of the past, but for things in the future that haven't been invented yet. And that's what we've seen since classical education became so dominant at the time of the Renaissance and Reformation, and Luther and Calvin were classical educated and classical educators. We've seen Europe transformed. We've seen America transformed. And we say, who could predict that? And the answer is, if you have that kind of fundamental education the classical education gives, you're ready not only in your own life to be prepared, you're ready in the life of your society. And the Deweyite education prepares people for what seemed to be the future in the 1920s and 30s and 40s and 50s.
Dr. Kopp, we hear often math and science, math and science, math and science, that the U.S. is falling behind the rest of the developed world in math and science. What's the real problem here?
There are two issues here, in my humble opinion. One is, I don't think we're falling behind. Our best people are very good. But the concentration on STEM is producing this sort of over-muscular left arm and withered-away right arm. One of the great things about classical education, no matter what the details are, is it sees education as the arts of language and the arts of mathematics. And from that comes the ability to think logically and express yourself either persuasively or creatively. And from the math side, the ideas of either moving on to science or moving on even to music, which is taught mathematically in the classical system. We now have a system where kids come in. I teach an honors program. The quality of writing of excellent work in the sciences is going down because they're not taught the arts of language anymore. It's as though the arts of mathematics will suffice and that science and math will suffice. By the way, the people I know in our math departments feel the same way. They think that they're being turned into a practical tool that they view themselves as liberal educators, and they're teaching their kids to think. And instead, all people want out of math is how to get a job and how to do the project they've been assigned by the person who's the head of the project, whether it's a business project or an academic science project. And we're really the greatest scientists of the past 500 years, whether it's Copernicus or it's Tycho Brahe or it's Galileo or it's Newton or it's Darwin or it's Heisenberg, these people had classical educations. That is, they were trained to use language and math, and that's where their greatness came from. And I really foresee an explosion in the STEM bubble when it turns out that they've been trained magnificently, but with only one half of what you need to be a scientist.
Let's talk a little bit about parents. What can parents do if they find themselves concerned about the curriculum of Common Core and in their kids' classroom?
There are two things, of course, a parent can do in the wider sense. One is all these things involve meetings and places where they talk about things. And to go there and say, look, I know that I don't have all the answers, but I'm bothered by this aspect or that aspect. I'm bothered by the top-down attitude. I'm bothered by the fact that there seems to be such rigidity in the standards. But whatever things really bother you. The other thing you can do is put your kid in a classical Christian school where they'll get the kind of education that you need to be a creative person, an active citizen, and an informed believer.
In the best of all possible circumstances, what could, you said there's nothing that's, you know, wrong per se with having a national standard, albeit not imposed from the top down. In the best of all possible worlds, what would that look like?
Well, that's a great question. In the best of all possible worlds, it would involve, at the beginning, a lot of work on fundamentals. It involves knowing grammar, knowing phonics, hopefully having some introduction to a foreign language, making sure that you know your fundamentals of math. It's amazing how many kids in college don't know their math facts anymore because that's just mere facts, that's mere verbiage. That means a large concentration at the beginning on what we call in classical education the grammar level. Because when you control the facts, when you've mastered the grammar level, you're then ready to use them, the so-called logic level, and actually start thinking in a really creative way. And very few of us actually end up being tremendously creative in our lives, but we all need fundamental facts about language and about mathematics, and we need to learn how to use them in ways that are, although the logic of language, logic of math is different, they are parallel. And that's the great thing about teaching logic and about teaching geometry, that teaches you that particular. Once you've done that, you then opened up the possibility for a lot of different higher level things. Some high schools may be concentrating on STEM, some being liberal arts, some being arts, and some just sort of preparing kids, you know, in a more general way. So, you know, the higher you go, the greater diversity there should be. At the beginning, however, they need to know their grammar, they need to know their math, and that needs to be, you know, that's what needs to be on the national level, those fundamentals.
Before we let you go, you're going to be speaking at the Consortium for Classical and Lutheran Education, the conference, July the 15th through the 17th in St. Louis. What can you tell us about your presentation, Classical and Christian Tolkien?
Well, among the great creative people in the 20th century, and the person whose book always wins the best book of the 20th century when ordinary people vote, although never when college professors vote, is Tolkien, the author of The Lord of the Rings. And Tolkien had a classical education. He loved the classics. And I'm going to argue that both as a scholar and as a creator, this classical education permeates his work. The same thing is true of his good friend C.S. Lewis, by the way. I could have given exactly the same talk on C.S. Lewis, I mean, using different examples, showing how a classical education helps make you both a better scholar and a more creative person, and how this really comes out in works that we all know and love, frankly. Ordinary people know and love Tolkien in a way they've never read James Joyce or whatever the really popular people in college campuses.
Folks, you can find out more about the Consortium for Classical and Lutheran Education Conference, July the 15th through the 17th in St. Louis, at our website, issuesetc.org. Click Listen on Demand. Dr. Christian Koff is Associate Director of the Honors Program at the University of Colorado Boulder, and he will be one of the speakers at the Consortium for Classical Lutheran Education Conference, July the 15th through the 17th in St. Louis. Dr. Koff, thank you for your time.
It's great to talk to you, Todd.
When we come back on this Friday afternoon, March the 21st, Dr. Albert Moeller, President of Southern Baptist Theological Seminary in Louisville, Kentucky, will join us to reflect upon the death and the life of Fred Phelps, Sr., founder of Westboro Baptist Church.
Thanks to the following congregations for standing with us by joining the Issues Etc. 300. Pilgrim Lutheran, Santa Monica, California. Emmanuel Lutheran, Terre Haute, Indiana. Trinity Lutheran, San Angelo, Texas. Trinity Lutheran and Emmanuel Lutheran, Holloway, Minnesota. St. John Lutheran, Schaumburg, Illinois. Our Savior Lutheran, Pipestone, Minnesota. Real Lutheran Fellowship, Rochester, Minnesota. Living Word Lutheran Church, The Woodlands, Texas. St. James Lutheran, Logansport, Indiana. St. John's Lutheran, State Center, Iowa, and Trinity Lutheran, West Chicago, Illinois. Find out how your church can support this worldwide outreach by including Issues Etc. in your mission or advertising budget. Just go to our website, issuesetc.org, click support, and print a one-page flyer. When your congregation joins the Issues Etc. 300, we'll publicize your congregation on the radio, at our website, and in the Issues Etc. journal. issuesetc.org, click support, the Issues Etc. 300.
Smartest listeners in radio. You're listening to Issues Etc.
What happens when you take solid doctrine and solid curriculum and combine them with ancient scholars and modern technology? You get Wittenberg Academy, the very first completely online classical Lutheran high school. We are unabashedly Lutheran and offer families a rigorous standard of academic excellence. Students can pick and choose classes, or they can utilize our entire curriculum for their high school education. Visit our website, wittenbergacademy.org, to find out more.
Those beautiful notes were just the beginning of We Praise You and Acknowledge You, O God, Concordia Publishing House's debut CD collection from Pastor Stephen Starkey, one of the most significant Lutheran hymn writers of our time. For a limited time, save 10% when you use promotional code URA. Simply visit cph.org today. Lutheran thought, Lutheran substance, Lutheran music, brought to you by Concordia Publishing House.